What's going to show at the Hollywood tomorrow night at 7 o'clock?
What's going to show is a couple pieces of animation from this documentary in progress called My Rock and Roll Fantasy, which is a film that I'm making about my friend Molly 16 and her death. She committed suicide in 1995, and also the culture around that time. What I'm showing is one animation that's just finished. It's called Jen Likes Heroin. It's about us, me and Molly, our characters in it, doing heroin for the first time. It takes place at the X-Ray Cafe and the Howling Frog Cafe.
It's also showing then with the documentary about the X-ray.
Yes, it's showing with Benjamin Arthur Ellis's documentary X-Ray Visions. And then after that, we'll have some music by Sean Krogan. The reason that I wanted to make this documentary, I moved back here in 2012, and it's always been a very painful place for me to be in Portland, and I'm from here. I was raised here. I went to school here and everything, but I had all these experiences that were very painful, and the biggest one was losing my friend Molly. I moved back here and was seeing the way that Portland was portrayed and the way that it was feeling to me. It kind of felt like this ghost town, even though it was like way more populated and a lot more shiny new stuff. But I couldn't really see any of the things that were familiar to me from a long time ago when I was a teenager and young. My view, I know because of some of these experiences that I've had, it may be a little bit darker than others. People being like, this is Portland, like this graphics or representations of what Portland was made by people that had come here more recently, like a picture of the white stag with the blinking nose, which is kind of like this epitome of like gentrification in a way. And it's on Burnside, and Burnside to me it is not quirky. It's also this place of all this drug culture. There's just a lot of good and bad there. When I was just walking around and living, I lived very close to the X-ray, so I would always just walk there, just walk over the bridge. I still see all the drug culture and everything, but it's kind of like those are the things that are being pushed to outer corners and stuff. Whereas before, it was very integrated into the artistic communities and everything. The X-ray was a place where there were a lot of people off the street constantly coming in. They weren't really being like, no, you can't come in, you don't have money or something. So it was very integrated with Old Town. That was very unique to that spot. I left here, like I said, I moved back in 2012. So I left here in 2000 and lived in several different places, but I haven't seen something that was that like integrated with the community as it used to be. And there were other things that were like that too. It wasn't just the X-ray. There were other little pockets of culture that were accepting of all these just random elements.
There's also a very intentional business community push of trying to erase that. The powers that be really want to support the famous culture that's from here, but they don't want to like have the structure of all ages spaces or free spaces or all of that to create the culture. Like they don't understand that there are steps to getting to have like the famous bands from here that then they can market and put in their things. It's like having that investment in people when they're young and creative and trying to figure it out. Totally no interest in that. And not only just in currently creating it, but they're trying to erase that it ever happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People also have tended to remember the X-ray, but you're also talking about the Howling Frog, which I hear referenced so much less. So can you pretend that someone has never heard of the Howling Frog and describe it to them?
The Howling Frog was a place that it was, you know, again, you could just kind of walk in there, didn't necessarily need to buy anything. They weren't necessarily workers. Sometimes there was no one working there and people would just volunteer to do the coffee. Then when there were people working there, I remember one time going in and the owner and some other worker were chanting, "We hate you. We hate you. We just want your money." Yeah, there were people wandering in all the time. It wasn't very regulated. So this person had gone in there and like gone to the bathroom all over the floor. And then, you know, they just dealt with it with a bucket of water, not like, you know, calling the police or something like that. You know, it had a gallery and they showed like movies that wouldn't necessarily see other places, like by like Nick Zed or horror movies, X-rated type of movies. I mean, just a lot of things curated at, probably by Daniel Mensch, who was there a lot.
When did you meet Molly?
We met in high school. We both went to Lincoln and then we both dropped out of there and went to MLC afterwards. That first summer that we started hanging out, it was a really kind of, a lot of things were happening in her personal life and a lot of things were happening in my personal life with my family and her family, where we bonded. It got very close at that time. That was 14, yeah. Molly definitely knew way more about music and everything going on than I did, and I kind of followed her lead, and we had a relationship that's kind of typical in some ways of like opposite personalities. You know, I was a very shy person and kind of goth, and she knew about all these bands that I had no idea. I mean, we went to like Sub Pop on our school trip at MLC and we got all these 7-inches, and but it was really her that was spearheading all that. She knew about all that. I guess from what I remember from the time that she was in middle school, she just kind of knew. And she had a neighbor that was in this old Portland punk band. She got a lot of influences from that person and then ended up playing in a band with that person who was, I guess, probably in her 30s or something.
What band was that?
Well, she was from The Obituaries, and the band Molly started with her was called Backseat Loser.
Why did you come back to Portland? Why did you decide to make this movie?
Some of the years before I left here, like 1998, probably to 2000, those were really lonely, drug-filled years. I mean, it's been, you know, over 15 years since I've done heroin, but those were not years that I really wanted to repeat. So when I came back here, I started thinking about all those things that were painful and that I'd kind of pushed aside for over 10 years to go to school and do adult type things. And I really didn't think about that part of my personality. I mean, a lot of people don't. You don't really want to think about painful childhood. And if you have a way to like move away from it, that's great. Then being back in here, I kind of was like, well, maybe I should totally immerse myself in it. Maybe I should really find out these stories and really dissect these stories in the hopes that that would make me a better person, but also a better filmmaker. This is the most personal story that I could tell. I had all of Molly's stuff that I'd been carrying around for years. I mean, since 1995, to 2000, I was kind of like homeless, like carrying all this crazy stuff with me. I had like mannequins that were Molly's that were stored at different houses, and then all these clothes and tape collections and her curtains and her stereo and just everything. And it all dwindled down to her artwork. From 1995 to 2000, I wasn't really in a good place where I could keep track of all those things. And they were just things. Really, the important thing was her artwork. And that I was storing at my parents' house. So when I got back here, I saw the intensity of it all. I mean, Molly, she was only a teenager. She was a teenager when she died. She poured everything out into her writing and her drawings. I mean, just laid everything out about what was going on with her life. And that's such a rare thing. I mean, a lot of people don't get there until much later. I mean, I certainly am not like that and wasn't like that. Molly and I would make zines, but I would never show my zines. They were just things that I'd Xerox and then keep. But they weren't really filled with that type of writing that was so self-reflective and revealing of everything that was going on. And they were stories that I felt like a lot of people could relate to, and that they don't often get told, because a lot of the people that those things happen to end up dying. They end up killing themselves. She went through a lot of abuse and being in the foster care system. After she died, I ended up working in some of the places that the group homes that she was put into, and you know, other kids committed suicide while I was working there. It's just really common when you have not really any family that you can turn to. All your rights are taken away at that time. You know, I've worked around here at like different various organizations, and I've seen a lot of kids that remind me of Molly. I don't know, you know, what happened to all of them, but her particular story and my particular story with her, how much that she has influenced me. Like I said, I was very shy. I kind of feel like after her death, I had to take some of the things that were so special to me about Molly and integrate them into my personality in order to really function, because before I had just kind of like been this person that was following this like very outward person around and not really talking to anyone. She has been the most influential person on my life and on my personality. So there's that story, and then the story of her life. And then I thought, how can I portray this? At first I thought, well, maybe I can take these drawings and animate the drawings somehow. But then I thought, I'm not going to be able to tell the stories that I want to tell just by moving her drawings around. So then I got an animator. And then we took two things that are directly from her zines. And that's one of these stories is Jen Likes Heroin. That is the animation that I'm showing at the Hollywood. Another one was her interview with Courtney Love, which I'll also be showing. I decided to integrate those zine stories from her voice, because I wanted to have something that was her voice within this documentary, and then also having parts about the culture that we were part of at the time, which was really exciting and something that I miss a lot. And at the same time, there were some really violent elements to all that. There was a lot of anger. There was a lot of angst, I guess, within that time, when in grunge and Riot Girl both have those elements. But there were things that we did that I would like to see other young girls doing. This is messed up. We don't like this place. Let's go picket it. And then getting these signs and they're just going and picketing it, you know, just like right then. Not waiting to find some big group. A lot of Riot Girl things are known for that immediate action. Like, there's someone in the community that's a rapist. Okay, let's spray paint the sidewalk with their name. Those things get, they can get because they were so immediate, and then, you know, you don't know what necessarily everyone's reactions are going to be, and it's kind of like you're having the court of your own making. So it can get tricky and hard to continue. That energy was there, and those are the type of things that we would do. Immediate flyering about things that we were upset about. Put it all over. Just.
How did you become a filmmaker?
With my personality of just being someone that likes to observe, I very much like to tell stories about my own experience and then other people's experiences. And I used to really be into drama and acting, but then I found that I wasn't really able to tell stories that way. I had to kind of had to be beholden to whoever was doing the casting. And I stopped doing that when I was in high school and started writing. And then I had this camera. It was this SVHS camera. And that's a lot of the footage that I have of Molly and that I'm using in the documentaries from this old camera that I would take around and film things. This is a documentary in progress. There's other animations that we need to do to finish it. So I am really excited about this particular one. And just kind of like a little background on it is I did get this grant from Precipice to make this. And I was talking to my animator and I was like, well, what, you know, which animation do you think I should put in for this grant? Should I really try to get money to talk about teenagers doing heroin for the first time? Like, does that make sense? And, you know, I mean, I asked several different people. I was like, I don't know, you know. So I was really shocked and happy that I was able to get some funds to make that. You know, it's not something that a lot of people want to give money to.
Well, the Precipice is so awesome, and this is so awesome because you don't learn new things or you don't think about things different way unless you get uncomfortable. So teenagers doing heroin for the first time hopefully puts people in that uncomfortable place where they can really think about, like, what's actually happening out there? This is what happens with freedom. And knowing that people come to a lot of these places because of trauma, like, if there's no better ways to deal with trauma besides trying to numb it, then this is what's going to happen. Like, how can we have support for people to actually figure out trauma?
It's always been something that has bothered me when working in these different places with foster kids and everything, that I wouldn't necessarily be able to show something like that or talk about it, even though a lot of the kids were are actively doing heroin, doing speed, doing all these things, and yet you can't have conversations about it. Yeah, it is what people do and still do when they have trauma. But I don't know, this, you know, it's like, oh, we just need to talk about the good choices or something. I mean, that doesn't sit right with me.
So, the Hollywood Theater.
Yes, yes. Thursday night. It's a sliding scale and should be a fun representation of the Portland punk downtown scene that I'm trying to represent in the movie. I really like Ben's film.
7 o'clock. What's the sliding scale?
7 to 15. And but no one turned away for lack of funds, so.
But all the funds are going to help you finish the documentary.
Yes, correct.
Thursday, March 9th, 7 o'clock, Jen Likes Heroin, X-Ray Visions, and then Sean Krogan live afterwards?
Yes.
And then if people want to learn more about the movie, or if they want to donate funds to help you finish it, or get in touch with you for future screenings or anything, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, they can do it through the Hollywood site. My Rock and Roll Fantasy is one of the many films that Hollywood sponsors, and so I have a site on there if you wanted to donate or anything. And then I think it links to my website, and then My website is dirtbagfilms.squarespace.com.
Thanks for coming in, Amber.
Yeah, thanks for having me.